Today on The Grave Talks, Energy, a conversation with Patty Wilson. Without energy, there would be no life. Without energy, there would not be any hauntings. But with so many sources of energy, just how could these sources influence a haunting? Today, we discuss energy, its countless forms, and how it has played roles in infamous hauntings such as the Amityville Horror, and how it plays a role in every element of any haunting, both on the side of the living and the dead.
Oh my gosh, it plays a huge role. Probably one of the central factors, and it plays it in multiple ways.
And how so? Why don't you expand upon that?
Sure. Okay, first of all, the energy of the people involved. So that if you have a house and there's a haunting, it might be a very, very mild haunting until, say, the next family moves in. And then the next family's got a lot of energy, and type of energy matters as well. And all of a sudden, it ramps up madly because you're feeding this thing, whatever it might be, assuming it's spiritual, a lot of energy. And some people's energy is just more capable than other people's. So that's the first way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's a two-way street. So not only can you make the haunting worse, but they can actually make people sick. They can cause all kinds of trouble because the energy then that they're putting out can influence or infect the human beings living there. I think a really good example of that might be the Amityville Horror case.
Mm-hmm.
I knew George Lutz, and I know some of the other people who've investigated the case. I knew Dr. Han Poulter and a couple other people. Mm-hmm. And I know it's always been one of the arguments against the case being legit. Well, everybody who's ever lived in the house since then have never had a problem. I don't think the energy that was moving around that house during that 28-day period
mm-hmm.
is the energy that's moving around that house now. I think that was the perfect storm.
Yeah. That was actually one of the things I was thinking of as you were talking about energy. One of the examples I was going to make was exactly the same case you're talking about, the Amityville Horror, where you have houses that seem to produce a lot for a lot of people. And then kind of go dormant. And that's a case where publicly there has not been a lot of reported haunting activity. It's certainly not to the level of which George and Kathy and the kids had. But I have heard from, and I'm sure you may have too, but from people or here and there at certain points in time, there have been other things that may have occurred in the property for those who live there at certain points in time, but nowhere near the level of what it was. Is that kind of just like the perfect storm of, in your opinion, George and Kathy had the right energy for the time and the place that they lived in that house, and it fed the energy of whatever it was that was going on and was sitting in that house?
Sure. I think that there was negative energy in that house to start with. First of all, we know from the historical documents, which are court transcripts, eyewitness testimony of family members and what have you, that the DeFeos were definitely a dysfunctional family.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting constantly. The father was physically and verbally and emotionally abusive. This is not deniable.
Mm-hmm.
This came out in court testimony.
Yep.
And eyewitness accounts and people that knew the families and what have you. So there was a lot of negative energy floating around. Now, whether the energy induced it, enhanced it, I can't speak to. I was never there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to notice that we know that much happens. Now, you bring in a year later, the George and Kathy Lutz
mm-hmm.
and the three kids. most people don't know about it. I don't know why, because he's talked about it publicly before in years before he passed. Mm-hmm. And so did Kathy. And she talked about it in multiple different venues as well. But they were messing with the supernatural. They were doing transcendental meditation. They were doing all kinds of things that were very popular at that time frame.
Sure.
In the field of the supernatural. So they were messing with energy.
Mm-hmm.
And between their natural energy, what was already in the house, and then messing with it even further, it just became like a perfect storm.
And that's an interesting thing, because you're right, he had talked about it prior to his passing, and then it was brought up quite heavily in one of the documentaries, My Amityville Horror, about what George had been involved with. And you having known George, do you think he knew exactly what he was messing with? Do you think it was more of a curiosity and it was kind of a thing of the day, you know, to be into that? Do you think there was any, you know, knowledge as to what kind of a pot he was stirring?
No, absolutely not. And I won't tell you I was his biggest fan. I knew him. I met him several times. I thought he was kind of a rude person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not his biggest fan.
Sure.
But I don't believe for one moment that he knowingly and willingly or willfully stirred that pot. I don't think they chose the house because they thought it was a good vehicle for any of that. I know they were concerned about it. They did have, and every person that lives in that, has been in that family, has testified that they had conversations about, you know, can we live in a house where six people were murdered? Can we put that part of this house's history behind it? You know, that sort of thing. So
yeah,
they weren't looking for that, but they were curious, and they were experimenting actively with different forms of meditation, different types of energy moving, which is what it ends up being, and other things as well that could possibly have tweaked the energy. So they just became like this really good source of power for whatever was already there and negative, and it just blew the doors off. Now, I will also allow for literary license and what have you, but there's no doubt that some of the stuff happened that, and I know that you've interviewed, I believe, one of the female reporters,
yeah,
who had subsequently been there and stuff like that. So you know that there was still residual stuff happening,
yeah,
even a couple years later.
Yeah, and obviously not to the level of which George and Kathy had reported, but it seemed, when you have something like that, when you have an energy source or whatever you want to call it, some sort of energy that's in a home, and obviously it didn't seem very positive from everything we've heard reported on the Amityville case as to when they were there. Can that energy ever be eradicated, or does it go dormant, like some things in nature just simply do go dormant for years or for lifetimes practically? Is there a thing where you can eradicate it, or is it really, you can't kill the energy? Can it move out of a house when it comes to this sort of thing, or where does the path take us?
You can't kill it.
Mm-hmm.
You can remove it. But you can't destroy it. Energy does not get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a force that will be, you know, somewhere at some point in time. Now, is it on that land? Because, you know, they moved the house off the land. And there's another home sitting on that property now. Is it something that will return at some point? That is truly God's guess. I have no clue. But you can't destroy the energy. So it could be expelled to move elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'll just go because it's easier pickings,
mm-hmm,
elsewhere, but you can't completely eradicate it, make it never have existed, kill it.
Mm-hmm. When we're talking about energy, and I want to talk more generically about it, but I'm very curious because you did bring up Amityville, and it's one of those topics that I'm always very fascinated with, and I'm always interested to hear individuals' opinions and experiences on it. So I will stick on that for just a little while longer, because I'm curious to get your opinion on it. With looking back at that case, obviously there are a plethora of resources, and it's interesting how Chris now will talk about it, and Danny has talked about it. With the information that's out there, what is your opinion on the energy source? What was it that was tormenting that family? Hollywood and all that will make us go, oh, it's the devil, it's demons. And maybe that's the answer. I don't know. What, in your opinion, do you think, what kind of energy source was that that caused the accounts that were not taken with literary license, but what George and Kathy and the kids have all publicly stated as this being their reality?
Okay, so there's a few possibilities. Having not been in the house, yep. I can't answer the question definitively. So
sure.
Here are my possibilities, the most likely being the demonic energy, which I do believe in. I've worked demonic cases.
Yeah.
It could have been almost like a poltergeist type thing where the energy built up so loud and so fast, and then it just blew when somebody came that could tap it. That's a possibility. The djinn has to be a possibility, as weird as that might sound to some people, because they can manifest in those kind of ways. And it could be some sort of elemental earth energy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the four possibilities I would have picked. And people don't know much about elementals and earth energies and stuff like that. But elementals can be very territorial. And obviously something did not like people being in that structure. They were damaging. So whatever was there at that point in time definitely was hostile
mm-hmm.
to people living there.
Let's talk about that for a little bit, because when we hear about negative things happening to people, oftentimes we jump to, well, it's something demonic, or it's something that was living, that was a human being that, you know, maybe lived on the property or something and was a cantankerous individual, and in death is still a cantankerous individual, or even more so, even more extreme than just a cantankerous person. Elemental energy. What, can you expound upon that for us a little bit more? What do you mean by that? What is elemental energy? And how does it then have various personality traits?
Okay, so they are actually a classification of beings. And there are actually sub-classifications to them. So I call the one that's like a little tiny hairy thing, about four and a half, five foot tall. I call it Cousin It, because that's the closest I've ever come to anything that looks like it in our world. And they tend to be a little more like standoffish, a little more mellow. They're pretty much just let me alone, let me alone, let me alone. I'm good. Just, you know, let me alone. And they'll coexist. I have come across some that are, I don't know how to explain them. I'm trying to give you a visual on it.
Sure.
Like creepy little, some cross between a demon and a creepy little gnome.
Okay.
And they're greenish or bluish or reddish, depending on which kind you come bump into. And I don't know if that has anything to do with how malevolent they are. Those ones are a lot more aggressive. And they will pick a territory and they will damage anything that's within that territorial structure. I encountered a case years ago. And the family was having a lot of problems. They thought that there was a haunting in their house because the doors were unlocking and their small son, who was two, was getting out. Now, they lived on a property that had a very swift-moving creek going through the backyard. And he seemed to be gravitating to that creek almost as though somebody was taking him there. And so I went and with my team, I have a team, and we, you know, we worked it. We were picking up some residual stuff. We weren't getting anything much, just a little bit of, you know, hanky energy. Even the EMFs were not kicking to any extent. Nothing was working. None of the traditional ghost hunting stuff. And I said to my one of my partners, I said to Charlie, let's go out back and just take a walk around. And it was the middle of the winter. And we went out and we were walking around the perimeter of the property, just kind of getting a feel for the property and down near the creek and back up. And as we came back up through the yard, we just both of us at the same time felt like there was something watching us. You know that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So we turned and for just a moment glimpsed, and this was a greenish one, and it kind of was right there at the edge of the creek and then just shimmered and was gone. In that moment, and I've had experiences with them previously, so I immediately caught what was going on. And I looked at Charlie, and I don't know if people, you know, I'm sensitive, but this thing just kind of left a download, almost like, you know, I really hate you. I want you to go away. Come here and I will drown you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that kind of, you know, feeling. And I went back up to the house and I sat down and I talked with the little boy. He was 2, going on 3. And we were coloring and we were drawing pictures. And I said, so what color is the, he said he saw a little man down at the water. I said, because I asked him, why do you go to the water? And he said, little man. And I said, okay. I said, is the little man nice? And he said, shrugged his shoulders, you know. And I said, what color is the little man? And he tapped a green crayon. And I said, oh, you mean the blue one? And he shook his head no. I said, you mean the red one? And he shook his head no, and he kind of grinned. And then I said, so what color is the little man again? And he tapped the green one. So I'm saying that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck to his story. For a 2-year-old, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
And, you know, because 2-year-olds, normally, if you're just playing, they're playing, they'll just go along with it.
Sure.
And so then we sort of talked a little longer. I'm playing and I'm giggling with him. And he had a dinosaur, like a little Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I said, is this your little man? And he's like, no. And I said, is he like your little man? He says, yeah, little man have beard. And what we had seen had a beard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that's about as close to an eyewitness description as I'm getting out of a 2.5-year-old.
Sure.
You know, but at least we got something.
Yeah.
Now I have to tell you, my job is, I'm a counselor. I've done child behavioral therapy for years. I know how to interview a child without, you know, trying to implant something in their head and what have you. And so I felt that I had kind of gotten to whatever threshold I was getting to with the little boy. So we ended up going out. And well, first we blessed the home and we sort of sealed it off energy wise. And then we went out to the water and just sort of stood there and kind of waited a little while. And then Charlie and I did a ritual at the water to kind of keep it down there in the water where it couldn't come out. And I honestly believe that it came to the house and unlocked the door so the child could come out so we could get rid of the child. Subsequently, I went back and I started to do some research. I do property research whenever I do a case. And I found that over the years from about 1910 until current, there were 6 people who drowned in that little creek around that spot, which I thought was a phenomenal amount of people considering how rural that area was.
Yeah.
And to have been in that same spot.
That's very bizarre. Yeah. And then the negative energy of these elementals that are there, you know, were they getting involved? Were they using what other elements of nature, you know, could have influenced someone to drown? What's your thoughts there?
Well, it would influence the child to get into the water. It would kind of make you feel like you needed to go climb in the water. And then I think it caught onto you at that point. It held you at that mm-hmm. point. They're very strong when they want to be, physically strong
mm-hmm.
as well. And I don't know why it was hateful. I don't. I've just never encountered one of them that's not hateful. And so, you know, that's what we did at that particular property. There's also one, it's kind of a lizard man like. Did you ever see Land of the Lost as a kid?
Sure.
The Sleestak?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Smaller, thinner, not as hokey looking, but the lizardy eyes, they're like yellow with black slits.
Mm-hmm.
And those tend to be in wilderness areas. But again, they're all about an element. So the one is water, the one is earth. The cousin it's, they seem to be more about air
mm-hmm.
and they're less aggressive. Those are the 3 I've met the most often. And I've not, when I say most often, I'm talking maybe 6 times in my entire life I've encountered this. So it's not like I go to every site and go, oh, there's an elemental.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one because we've heard stories over the years of some of the things that you're describing. And I really didn't know a whole lot about elemental energies or elementals. I've heard the term here and there, but it doesn't get brought up that often. But we've had many, many stories from callers and writers who have described gnome looking things. And it's always been one that's puzzled me, or it'll be a recollection from childhood, and they'll swear up and down They know this sounds crazy, but when they were in their crib, they swore to God there was this gnome-looking thing with a beard that would walk into their room at night. Quite often, it was a negative experience. It was a menacing type feeling. Not that the thing ever really did anything to them other than provide them with this fear, but it was not your friendly garden gnome that's dancing to Elton John music. It was something else, but resembling a gnome, which I think is what we find so interesting about something like this, is why the imagery? Why? What are the origins of elementals? I guess would be my question. And obviously, that goes to an opinion, but in your knowledge and in your research, where do they come from? Are they, you know, are they angelic? Are they demonic? Are they something else? Were they people? Were they some species? What were they?
Ancient demons are the same thing. There's six classifications of angels, and there's six classifications of demons.
Okay.
Because actually what they are, fallen angels, okay?
Okay.
They're jinn. Elementals are spirits that were created by whatever force you want to call God, mm-hmm. and were attached to an area. They have never been human. They have never been angelic, demonic. They're not jinn. They are elemental. They are these species and subspecies of entities that exist, have just were created and exist and are attached to certain specific places. And you will come across them throughout the world in different guises. Now, there, and every culture has its gnomes, fairies, elves, fae folk of some sort. And they have always existed in every culture. They always will exist in every culture. They always lay low at the fringe. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to this topic.
Yeah.
And I am not the world's best expert on it. I just know that I've bumped into it enough to know that I see patterns repeating mm-hmm. over and over.
Do you think that an elemental is often confused for something else, some other, just, you know, the most generic term someone will use is ghost, but then you'll get into other, you know, subsets and all of that. Do you think that maybe they're experienced more frequently than we realize?
I think they are often that way, and I think they also... People will see multiple things happening in a property, mm-hmm. and sometimes they'll say that, you know, that's all that's going on is a haunting. You can have, and I've seen it quite often, coexisting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they even recognize that they're all there at the same time, but I know of several properties where there's an elemental, and then there are ghosts. And they seem to coexist quite well, whether it's because they don't recognize each other's frequencies or what it is, I'm not sure. But they definitely do exist. They are part of the paranormal panorama, mm-hmm. and they're very misunderstood and understood, if you will. So it makes it easy for them to be overlooked as the cause. And people have been conditioned by books, TV, and our culture that everything's a ghost or a demon.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's kind of like a neutral energy, neutral spirit, if you will, that's there, but does have its own personality, if you will. It's not just going to sit there. When it comes to an elemental or really any sort of energy, and you're out there and you're investigating, how much do the two elements, and I'm not trying to say elemental or by any means, I'm just completely using element in a different context here. The elements of an individual, an investigator, someone who's along for the ride, their energy and the energy of the location being investigated have to kind of sync up in a certain way for it to be a really truly successful investigation or a more active investigation where more really is uncovered?
Well, to some extent, I think it is important. I think that's what makes the difference between like a super good investigator who's able to discern all of these things versus, you know, somebody who goes in and they haven't taken the time to learn how to read energy in its many, many, many forms. because what I put out is going to impact the type of investigation we have. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to impact it and that I'm going to make it different type of investigation, but I might either make it lay low, or I might make it anxious, or I might make it excited, or I might make it aggressive. And so, like, I have a talk with people when I go to their homes and say, you know, this is what's going on. Now, you have options, because I want you to understand, if we're going to mess with this energy that's here and we're going to attempt to get it to go away or to cease and desist, there is always the potential for these things to occur. It's remote, but it does exist. So it's important that your investigators be really good at what they do. It's important that they be able to discern. I've been doing this 35 years.
Yeah.
You know, the investigating. And I have been who I am, what I am, my entire life. So I've spent an entire lifetime learning how to filter through the different energies and understand what I'm observing and feeling and what have you. So it's really important to find somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're not, and I know they're not a dime a dozen, but, you know, and I have a good team, and I have a couple people on my team that are pretty decent at that.
Mm-hmm.
But we work really hard. Like, we would sit and we would go over this stuff, and at a site, I would bring the person along and I would say, what do you feel? Not what I'm feeling, but what do you feel? Write it down.
Yeah.
And then they would write it down, and then I would write down what I'm getting, and then they would write down, the other person who's with us would write down what they're getting.
Yeah.
Because we would then sit down and look it over and see how, where it jived. So it is, it's interesting that, you know, you have to learn how to do it in that fashion. And it's not easy to do. It's not that it's horrible. It's just that you got to be able to discern between energies.
Sure. Let me ask you about this. This is very interesting because it doesn't necessarily immediately involve anything paranormal or supernatural or ghostly in its most generic form. But when you enter a room for the first time, you're walking into someone's house, and let's say there's no cues you can pick up on. It's not like the husband and wife are standing there and you can tell there's some animosity just by verbal cues or visual cues or whatever. Let's say they're not even in the room. But you walk into the house. Let's say they left. Not there at all. And you can tell if the last interaction there was high energy. If they were just sitting watching TV, I'm not going to say you're really going to feel all that much, or the average person is going to feel all that much. But if they were just fighting, you'll feel that. If there was some sort of positive energy going on, if there was, you know, they were sitting there laughing and joking and there was jovial fun going on, you can sometimes feel that. If there was some sort of expelling of energy, good or bad, you can usually pick up on it, or most can, even those who don't consider themselves to be sensitive. What is that? What are we feeling? What are we sensing? Why is that there, that almost remnant of what other people had just gone through? I guess some would think that they would just carry that with them as they go, but it seems to be left in the space in which they just were at.
Okay, so this is a kind of a large question to answer.
Sure.
So let's start at the beginning. Every single thing on this planet produces electromagnetic energy. That is a field of energy around us, whether it's living or it's inanimate. And we know that. And that's one of the reasons why we use like EMF meters, because the energy is what's left when the body goes away. So that can pick it up. And there's actually things like a tri-field meter that can be set for biological EMF versus mechanical EMF. So you produce an entire aura of energy that lays about, an inch away from your skin. And if you want to look at Curlian photography, you can see the energy, okay?
Yeah.
It's a form of photography where they can actually take a picture and see the energy field of your body. It's fascinating. One of the most fascinating things I always found about it is, like, say you tore a leaf in two, or you had a person whose finger was cut off. If you take a picture of that leaf or that person's hand with the missing part of a finger, mm-hmm. you will get the entire leaf or the entire finger. It'll be a little fainter than the rest of the image, but it still exists, which I think is what explains phantom limb syndrome.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Yeah. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with paranormal investigator Patty Wilson about energy. In part two, it gets even more intriguing. We'll talk more about the heart brain and how it works. And with that being said, is it possible for us to store memories in more places than just our brain? And then if someone receives a transplant from an individual, could those memories be passed on to the recipient? How much does our physical setting play a role in the energy that affects our well-being? And can energy that is left in a room after a high energy moment take on a life of its own? We're going to talk about all that and more. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up at thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper or directly through Patreon at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.